football on Off the Ball.
They can no longer dominate the ball, and the fear factor from City is gone, but they'll still finish second or third.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
Anyone can dream it, but to be it, you must never stop competing. Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish women's rugby.
You're welcome back. So it is number one versus number two in the world in the Women's Rugby World Cup final. A fitting pairing, England versus Canada, Saturday, 4 o'clock, in front of a sellout crowd of 82,000 at Twickenham. Delighted to say that Anna Capeless is with us on the line to preview. Anna, I presume you're going to be one of the 82,000.
Yes, I will be there. Yeah, it's nice this week because I have been on commentary every weekend till now. So this was a really nice week just to kind of, you know, not be drowning in stats and reviews and reading and everything. And I still have a part to play this weekend with. I'm going to be chatting on a panel with Asahi, who are the main sponsors. But it's been nice to get to this stage of competition. And finally, the rugby's in London. So it's finally in Twickenham, which is where I'm staying. It's where I used to live when I played in Harlequin. So this is where I'm based. So yeah, finally, it's finally come back to Twickenham.
Yeah, what a disgrace that the BBC have dropped you for the biggest weekend of all. It's been great hearing your voice even post the Ireland games, Anna, like in the semi-final last Friday night, having good Irish representation in a game in which Ireland aren't involved. I mean, it's been a pretty class experience, I'd imagine, the last few weeks for you.
Yeah, that was a huge honour, to be honest. Like, that was, you know, chatting to the BBC was going to be, you know, my thing to cover all the Irish games and then see after that. So I think the fact that England are in the final, you know, obviously tees up a lot of very knowledgeable English people that are already connected to the BBC. And so to do the semi-final for Canada and New Zealand was so awesome. And like the Irish games were amazing as well. Like the Irish games were, you know, bigger for me personally, but then to be able to do like New Zealand, Canada as a neutral was unreal. And like, that game was, I reckon that'll still be the game of the tournament. I don't think Saturday's game can be as good as what that was, because that was one of the best games of rugby I've seen in years.
It was unbelievable. There was a sense of shock factor to it as well, given how Canada sliced through New Zealand in that first half. Was it entirely unpredicted in your head, or did you always think that Canada might have a chance here to actually slaughter New Zealand, really?
Well, Canada had been showing it. It's a little bit like coming into England now this weekend. Canada is the team that has been like showing week after week that they are the team to beat at this. They've been, you know, their performances have been just fantastic. New Zealand's best performance was against Ireland. They weren't great in the quarterfinal. They weren't great in the pools. England, what England are relying on now this weekend is producing something that they haven't yet shown in this tournament, but they know they're capable of because we've seen it before. Canada, so it wasn't really a huge shock, you know, because Canada showed what it was capable of and then they used it really well. Like nothing gets to them. They're just such a joy to watch, like all across the park. I actually can't fault them at all, really. Like they were unreal. And like there was this thing of like, maybe this is New Zealand's, what you're banking on is New Zealand showing something that they hadn't shown yet, and they weren't able to show something better than they'd already shown, and to be able to beat Canada. There's always that chance that they might, because it's New Zealand, because it's a World Cup, and history would suggest that they might, but Canada were just too good.
Yeah, like you get into a weird stage while watching that game where I think maybe our natural status as Irish sports fans was to kind of root for Canada. Like, I know they're not complete underdogs, they're number two in the world, they've been in a World Cup final before, but you still kind of felt a sense of romanticism about seeing Canada make it to the final ahead of New Zealand. And yet when they raced into that early lead, you're kind of hoping for the Black Ferns to get back into it, and it was just that Canadian wall. The defence really is their weapon going into this weekend that would give you real hope of them causing a bit of an upset on Saturday. As good as they were and as glittering as their attack is, defensively is where they can really hang their hat.
Absolutely. And they also, we were trying to kind of, you know, match up the teams coming into that semi-final, and like one point was made about like Canada, they don't go for big offensive defensive moves. They don't go for like huge offensive hits. They're kind of happy to soak tackle in order to commit fewer players to the tackle and then the breakdown. But they, so what we were wondering was maybe New Zealand can kind of use that to gather a bit of momentum, but they weren't able to. Like Canada were just so clinical, and oh, mate, they're just a coach's dream. Like if there's any coach out there like wondering like what game will I show my players, show them that, like, because Canada did an excellent job even in defense, like about committing to only when they needed to, and then just trusting each other to make their tackles and not getting sucked in. They were so rarely under pressure defensively. And that comes down to as well, just, you know, making your own tackle when you call it and just being, you know, really, really honest in defense. Like they're just outstanding. And that's, you know, that's again, only in defense. Like their attack then is just, you know, just been such a joy to watch as well.
I'm sure she's been a player that you've been speaking about quite a lot all tournament long, but if people are tuning in this weekend for the first time to watch Canada for the first time this tournament, they are going to be struck immediately by Sophie Dugoody and the, I guess, what she is potentially going to do for the future of forwards in the game. Like I've always thought that the next step in rugby is that there will be hybrid players between back rows and centres in the game potentially. And look, I think South Africa potentially dipped a toe on that in the men's game. But a lock who kicks is a leap forward that I certainly wasn't expecting for quite some time.
Yeah, and that comes, I suppose, with the fact that, or maybe this is just kind of a theory from me, but I don't think it's a coincidence that like Canada isn't like spoiled by the realms of the men's game. You know, they don't have these big male idols like the rest of us have in the rugby world. You know, anyone else in that top 10 is in the shadow of a men's team, and we all grew up watching our own national male players and the male game and how the male game has, you know, the men's game has evolved. So the 10 is the kicker. Maybe sometimes a 12, maybe sometimes a 15, maybe sometimes a back. Sometimes, like Hannah O'Connor used to kick for Leinster, you know, she used to kick for club, but she didn't come from like underage either. I just feel it's a really unspoiled thing that if you go into a place where there's real hierarchy and old school rugby heads that are like, oh no, you're the second row and you're kicking, just get back to your lineouts there. You know, that's what the message would be. That's the message. Yeah. It's been the message when I was kicking, when I was trying to kick. And, you know, you're forward. This is what you should focus on. So, you know, that I don't feel like those messages are being put out there in Canada. So then you end up with someone like Sophie Dugoody. And it's really nice because it takes the pressure off the 10. Taylor Perry, like she... No one's, I've never seen such a successful team where there's so little chat around the 10. Like, she's just able to get on with controlling the game. And actually, is that not a much better idea than letting the 10 make all the calls, call all the shots, and then, while they're blowing out their ears, which is the phrase I used on BBC and everyone thought I was going to say something else. When, you know, the 10 has to step up and make the kick then, when actually they need to be thinking about the next few phases of the game. So, like, handing off those responsibilities because Canada's is kind of this unspoiled form of rugby, it just shows what that can eventually produce. And I actually, you know, my initial feeling when I woke up Saturday morning after covering the game Saturday night, I woke up and I was like, oh my God, I haven't been clear enough about how good Canada are. Because what we don't want this weekend is people who, you know, again, coming from the men's game or the traditional kind of, you know, men's space where Canada's not a superpower, this seems like a big shock because they've beat New Zealand, but it's actually not really because they're better than New Zealand currently. You know, they're number two in the world and they're playing better than them. If people tune in this weekend, are people going to be like, England should be beating Canada easy? But that's not what it is. And I was like that. I felt that responsibility as like a commentator to, yes, big up like Sophie Dugoody. Justine Pelletier was flipping class. Like so many of them individually were so class, but actually Canada as a whole, how good they are and what they've built is actually outstanding. And it's not a shock in the women's rugby world when you understand the context of it all. They are right where they should be and they're in a World Cup final and could win the World Cup final on Saturday.
Just one other thing on the goodie. Like, she comes from amazing Canadian rugby stock. Her mother was the first Canadian national team captain. Her father was also captain for the Canada rugby team. Then in college, she excels as a basketball player. Her underage reps are largely at out half. So maybe that's actually the lesson that we take from this, is that just because you're a gifted underage kicker doesn't mean you necessarily have to be wedded to the number 10 jersey for the duration of your career, particularly if you have a growth spurt or whatever. I'm not sure. Maybe the goodie was a 6 foot underage player as well. I don't know. But I presume it was more of a physical development thing where she got moved into the pack.
Yeah, because she used to play 10. Like you say, she used to play 10, which is, do you know what? That's such a college rugby thing, though. You'll find that lots of the girls who make it to international level would have played 10 at their club or their college or whatever. And I played 10 in college.
Right.
That's a thing. But it comes from the kind of the leadership qualities as well. And, you know, that whole role of 10 calling the shots, you know, that we were talking about. Their leadership qualities and their kind of outstanding player qualities that, you know, make you a standout player. So not everyone who's played 10 is going to stay 10. Like, there are front rows who played 10 for their club. You know, that's just how it's gone. And I'm sure it was similar-ish in the men's game. Or maybe in the men's game, you're much more inclined to be like, okay, this is what you look like. This is what you're going to stay as. But exactly like you say, Owen, like, it. Let it flow, let it change if it needs to, you know, and we don't have to be so strict about anything. But even like the, you know, Justine Peltier, for example, who's the 9, who to get player of the match, and it was completely deserved, by the way, I thought she was outstanding. To get player of the match on a night when Sophie Dugoody is as good as she is, like, that's a serious, you know, serious achievement. But the thing is, she'll snipe with the ball at any time. And so often you'll hear over the ref's mic, no 9, no 9, or that there's panic, or the ball slows down just because the 9 has got caught up in contact. No, never. Any of the Canadian players will just step in and distribute. Any of them, 1 to 15, like, can do that, and they have the confidence and the trust to do it as well.
It's very interesting when we look ahead to this game in the context of England's form in this tournament. Now, they haven't been beaten. They've been on this unbelievable streak running back to the last World Cup final, which was the last time they've lost a test match. So their form is exceptional when you look at it from that standpoint. However, as you say, we potentially hold this team to a much higher standard than anybody else in the history of world rugby. So them not blowing away teams completely at certain stages of this tournament does give you pause for thought with regards to them actually, you know, being a shoo-in this weekend.
Yeah, like, I've been banging on about this for the whole tournament, but I've been banging on about this since they lost the World Cup final in New Zealand. Like, their professional progress has been their own worst enemy, because they're so, you know, they get to chop and change their, like, if you look at the squads coming into this weekend, England gets to chop and change all the time because 1 to 30 can win against most other teams in the world. And, you know, maybe on their good day, they could win against anybody in the world, you know, so they don't have to put out. The competition isn't massive within their squad because they know that the changes will come, whether they're good or not. Well, you know, if you're talking about, like, from an Irish perspective now, we had to win every game in the Six Nations because there was no easy game. You know, it's really hard to change up the squad because we were on even, you know, playing field with, you know, from Scotland, Italy, Wales and ourselves, we're all dying for that third place. So, you know, there's no easy game. Whereas for England, there's so many easy games because so many countries are behind them. So they change a lot. Whereas if you look at Canada now, is it 7 or 8 of these players have started every match? And then they've gone with the exact same squad for the quarterfinal, the semi, and now the final. It's the exact same squad again. And they're used to losing. They know what it means to, like, go to the trenches. They've lost to England. They haven't lost much in the last few years, but they still know what it's like to fight, to not, like, have to lose. Like, England, like, just don't, they don't go through that enough. Like, the only time they're truly tested is in a World Cup final. They have played poorly this whole tournament, and they're in a World Cup final. So that feeling, and you can do whatever you want to try and replicate that feeling, but that feeling of, oh my God, we have to win. You cannot replicate that in training. You can't replicate that in matches where you're trying to create some kind of jeopardy. Like, I'm sure every time, you know, in my career before England played Ireland, they were saying, you know, and they have to say it in the media, you know, we respect Ireland and we knew they'd come out fighting and they give you all the credit, but they're still winning, like, you know, 40-7 or things like that, you know. So the creating that fear, England are just so not used to it, and they'll go through that tomorrow. It's probably a good thing that France kind of pushed them last week, but they're just, I'm just worried that they're not going to be able to handle it, whereas for Canada they'll be totally unfazed.
The other thing as well, and it's like not difficult whatsoever to frame this as a David versus Goliath situation. I know the standard of the teams is similar, but all you got to do is throw out two very simple arguments, which is A, England are fully professional. B, Canada literally had to crowdfund their way to this competition, which is absolutely insane. I think they're, what, 97% of the way towards their 1 million target project, Win the World Cup was the name of the project, which, to be fair, they could have set their standards maybe a little bit lower of that and people would really be able to play the poor mouth in Canada. But if you say Project Win the World Cup when you're crowdfunding it, it probably exposes how good you really are.
Exactly. But it also, they weren't looking for kind of sympathy, or they weren't looking, initially they were looking for sponsorship is what they were looking for. The crowdfund sounds like a real, yeah, like, oh, poor us, you know, like, ah, but they were looking for sponsorship. So I suppose them selling it like, you know, we want to win the World Cup and we think we can win the World Cup, it sounds better. But crowdfund has actually kind of, maybe masked what this actually is, which was them looking for sponsorship. And it's not like the other unions where, you know, we look at Scotland, where the girls went into the tournament, they didn't know if they were going to get contracts afterwards, you know, and things like that. It's different to that. Where Scotland had the money, they're just not sure what they're going to do with it. Canada Union has no money at all because they don't have attendances. They don't have a Murrayfield, a Twickenham and Alliance that they're packing out every Six Nations. They don't have that. So that's, they just don't have the money. So this whole crowdfunding thing was more about sponsorship as opposed to poor us, you know. It's a funny kind of way that it's been sold. But it's really interesting. And I think that, you know, a narrative that came up was like, wouldn't it be disastrous if a crowdfunded team won the World Cup? But there's been real pushback on that now, being like, no, doesn't it show that when you do just go for, you know, when you have the right sponsors in place, like, look what you can achieve.
Yeah, and also what you can achieve even if you don't have the same level of financial support as another team, and not letting your finances be the ceiling to your capabilities as well, will definitely be one of the stories that comes out of this if they win at the weekend.
But on that as well, Owen, just to make sure I include this as well, because this is important, is that, like, there's no strong enough league in Canada either. So a lot of those players are playing in the English PWR, the English Premiership, which has been built to build the English team. You know, so a lot of these girls are coming to play, and like none of them have played as well in the PWR as they have for Canada. So, you know, that's something in itself to say that, like, Canada is where they almost should be playing. Like, they should be as good for their club as they are for their country, but it's hard because you're playing in a league where, and I think this is another, like, problem for the English players, is that all of the English players, you know, they play in the clubs all around the country, but they have to play in their English role, you know, their English position, and they have to play. So the kind of element of competition is almost gone for them as well, because they have to play in the PWR. So they know they're going to get game time, whether they fight for it or not. They obviously have to fight for their jersey in the English setup anyway, so it's in their own interest to play really well. But it is just another interesting mindset that the other nations don't have to deal with. And then the other half that aren't in playing in the PWR, they're playing in France. So it's funny, there's just no league. It's similar, I suppose, to kind of Ireland situation or Scotland or Wales, really, when you look at it. But anyway, I think that's just another thing to consider when you look at this weekend.
Who's going to win this game on Saturday?
I'm going to have to say Canada, because in terms of semi-final, I thought that the Black Ferns might actually pinch it because I was relying on them producing something that I thought they hadn't shown yet. I think it'd be foolish of me to go into this weekend thinking that England are going to produce something that they haven't shown yet. And if we go on how everyone has prepared and got to this point, Canada is much stronger. So I'll say Canada, but it's still England at the end of the day. Like, they could. If the pressure gets to them, they're goosed. If they've learned enough from their last World Cup, and the last World Cup was only 3 years ago, not 4 years ago, so thanks to COVID. So maybe that extra year close of gap will actually make a difference because it was only 3 years ago. So I'm going to say Canada. Keep my voice.
It's fascinating. Like, the Twickenham factor could actually go against England if Canada get off to a really good start. You know, the groans in the stadium will be collective, and it's breaking new ground, which is brilliant for the sport, but could be to the detriment of your nerves if you're in a World Cup final. Anna, before we let you go, not to be a complete downer before we let you off the line, but people have seen your video on social media over the course of the week. You were in the studio with us a couple of months ago before the World Cup, talking about the hope and the ambition to get back out and potentially play some sevens over the next couple of years. You said that hopefully the days where you'd go without feeling concussion symptoms would just get more numerous. You'd be able to go more consecutive days and you'd hopefully get the all clear. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened as of this week.
No, it's funny. I was feeling really good after the summer. And yeah, like when we spoke, I was really hopeful about getting back to play. And yeah, in tens and sevens and kind of invitational stuff, I was just really looking forward to that end of my career where you can just have fun playing. But weirdly, for the kind of the commentary stuff, and I've been really busy with, you know, podcasts and writing, and it's been amazing, but it has somehow kind of lended itself to my concussion symptoms rearing their head again a small bit. And I'm not worried about it long term. I know that I've already felt like I'm close to the end of the tunnel, but it's not as close as I would have anticipated. So, you know, if I don't get back to play this year, I'm not going to try to play again in another year. I felt it was coming, but I had to make a call on it this week, just like, okay, that's not going to happen. I know I had arranged to kind of get into a training program to get back into the tens and play in the rugby tens championship in California in November, but I'm going to have to rule myself out of that now. So it's fine. It was hanging over me for a while. It's almost good to have just made the decision, but yeah, it's sad. And it's sad to just, I still kind of can't believe that this is how my career ended. And that's still, I'm still struggling with that, to be honest. And like, not everyone gets to go out the way they choose. I know that. And at any stage, you can get even a small niggle can mean you don't get to finish things the way, or you can get a really bad injury. So unfortunately for me, just the concussion is still taking its time to subside. But yeah, so it means that I've made a call and I'm not going to play anymore. So, which is fine. I'm grander than now. It was just needed to be made, needed to make the call on it.
Was it a strong suggestion from the concussion specialist that pushed you in this direction?
He's been great, and he's been really reassuring, and I'm not worried that this will never go away or anything. And I'm confident that the concussion is healing, but it's just a kind of a response mechanism that I'm not 100% yet. So it just kind of sends warning signals to let you know. And like I've said, and I know that this is why it happened to me, because I'm obviously going to go into coaching. I've already been coaching for the last number of years, so it's now time to go into it full time. But just maybe that's the message that I've taken, is that you, unless you're 100%, you cannot go near a rugby pitch, rugby ball, you're out. And, you know, the conversation around it is, there needs to be no eyebrows raised, no hands going in the air. It's just got to be a part of rugby. I thought that the gum shield addition to this World Cup has been great, because, you know, gum shield flashes, the referee flags it, the player says, oh, and she goes off. You know, there's been no like, what? Like, you've seen with kind of independent doctors before, and this whole talk of like, that was intentional, that, you know, as if, you know, like, so just the whole keeping the player safe becomes this really an integral part. And it doesn't matter if you are you know, Ellie Kildon or Sophie Degody or anyone coming into this, if you are not 100% going into a World Cup final, you can't play and you can't feature. And, you know, the disappointment of that, can we change disappointment around that to kind of almost celebrate it in terms of like, look at you're choosing to put a teammate who's at 100% that might be behind you in the pecking order into that position for you. So that's a really honourable thing, and a really honourable thing that you're doing for rugby and for your own safety, and that that needs to become, and I can see it, you know, what we saw with Gary Ringrose and the Lions tour, and I feel like we'll see it more and more, that when players are honest and when staff really support a player, that'll just have to become like the heart and soul of rugby, and an integral part of it.
That's an amazing perspective and first reflex to have on this week, which I imagine can't have been easy for you. Like, is there going to have to be a period now where you grieve your career a little bit, or is that kind of already done? Did you kind of know deep down that actually this day was coming sooner than you'd have hoped?
Yeah, I had felt it already. So I've been sad about it for a little while. Coming off the call with the concussion specialist the other day, I was like, I was in the park and I was like, oh my God, I've got to leave the park now and I've got to go home. But when I leave the park, it's like the beginning of the rest of my life, not as a player. And I hadn't fully let that go yet, because I still refer to myself as a player. Former international player, but like, I'd be like, yeah, I still play, but now finally officially that is over, and I am sad about that, but having a role to play in this World Cup has really helped it. Like, I've really enjoyed the commentary, the podcasting. I've really felt like you know, I've really enjoyed it, and I've got a lot of really good feedback from people, and, you know, people seem to really enjoy that I bawled my eyes out on the BBC when Ireland lost. So, you know, and that's all I know, you know, the only thing you know how to be is yourself. And I just, people seem to appreciate that. And I just wanted to kind of advocate for the girls, the Irish girls, really well. And I just, you know, hopefully did that like in a way, and that's all I can do. But that has kind of helped this as well, I think, just to feel, okay, I can still have a purpose, because I know I want to do it as a coach, but I feel like I'll never be able to emulate how it felt as a player, which is sad, because playing is just, you know, has been the best thing ever that I've ever done. And I don't know if anything will top that, but like, to have a little purpose around this World Cup anyway has been a good, like a real silver lining to it.
Yeah, you've certainly added a whole pile to anybody's experience, whether it's through print or television or radio over the last few weeks. So you've done an amazing job, Anna. There's definitely a bright future in rugby after this as well, but I guess congratulations on a great career as well. Not that she wanted it to be over. I should say, restate the record as well from my first question there. It was the Barbarians you said you wanted to play for again, not the Sevens, just to correct that from our last chat.
I did, like the fun stuff, you know, like the Dubai Sevens, there's Hong Kong Tens, the Rugby Tens Championship, and then hopefully, yeah, I wanted to maybe get one more run around with Barbarians. But I've already played twice for Barbarians. It's, you know, that has been two huge blessings to my career. So, you know, a third would have been selfish. It's not enough fixtures for all the girls who deserve to play for Barbarians. So that's also a thing to hand off to someone else. And I, you know, just spurs me on as a coach. I'll just have to go back in there as a coach someday. So yeah, watch this space. So the adventure might only be starting, like, who knows?
Yeah, I suspect it might be. Anna, thanks a million for your time this evening. Enjoy Saturday.
Thanks, Owen. Talk to you soon.